Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today we're joined by Gregory Wolfe. Our next guest is publisher and editor of what Annie Dillard calls one of the best journals on the planet, the Image Journal. He's also a writer in residence at Seattle Pacific University, author of a number of books, including a new collection of meditations on art, faith, and mystery. Obviously, one of my favorite subjects, and I know a subject that many of you enjoy as well. I'm referring to Gregory Wolfe, and he joins us in the studio this afternoon. It's good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Some people know your journey. You make reference to it in one of these essays, from Christian Science to Congregational to Episcopalian to Roman Catholic, in four easy steps.
Not quite.
Really quickly, how would you summarize your trajectory in terms of the spiritual path?
I suppose the simplest way to put it was that I started out with a great deal of abstractions and ideas about God, and I wanted to move closer and closer to flesh and blood, incarnate understanding of God and of the Christian faith. So in one sense, that trajectory, I feel, moves in that direction. I mean, I'm prejudiced, but I was searching for a more incarnational, imagination-friendly approach. And the imagination isn't abstract, it's concrete. It's always placing the big ideas and emotions and concepts like faith into very practical stories and symbols and ordinary stuff of daily life. So I wanted to move towards a sacramental tradition, really, and that's where the journey went.
Now, did your parents make any of those moves with you? They started out, were they both Christian Scientists?
Really, it was my father. I sometimes joke that an interesting parlor game would be, which novelist would you like to have tell your family's story, your family history? And in my case, it's hands down Dostoevsky. All the kind of intellectual intrigue, passion, fathers and sons at odds with one another, rebellion, revolution, it was all in my family. And just the short version is that my grandfather was a Marxist atheist who is in the outer edges of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Brains Trust. And his son, my father, went into advertising as a young man and
In New York
and in Los Angeles, wrote continuity for Jack Benny Show and many other classic, Bob Hope and so on. He came back to his father, said, "Look, I've made something of my life." His Marxist father said, "Well, you are as if I had a prostitute for a daughter. You have whored yourself off to capitalism. I will disown you if you don't renounce this way, and I give you a week to decide." A week later, my father said, "You know, I really don't think I'm doing anything that evil or bad. I really want to keep working in advertising." And his father said, "Well, I disown you." Well, at the root of that split, and they never saw each other from that day forward, was also a religious split, because my father decided that the free market and a belief in God were related to one another in American tradition. And so he rebelled against his father religiously. And I've diverged in my own way from my father, particularly in this specific denominational journey, but nonetheless, the two of us stay closer than recent generations prior to us did.
what a colorful history. Yeah. Dostoevsky does come to mind. Explain your passion for the arts. How do you see that early on in your life?
Yeah. Well, again, I had really two very powerful influences in my mother and my father. My father was a writer. He was an intellectual. He liked to write about economics, about history and ideas. My mother was a dancer. Her father, my maternal grandfather, was a painter, trained in Scotland at the Royal Scottish Academy of Art. So I had these two powerful drives. You might say they're rational, discursive, and then this intuitive, imaginative side. And they were, you know, finding it at times uncomfortable living in the same neighborhood, but literature to me was where they came together, because literature is concrete. It is about narrative. It's about symbol. It's about the ordinary stuff of life being transformed by the artist into something special. And yet literature has plenty of room for the big ideas, for philosophy, for ideology, for vision. And so in literature, I found the sort of influences from both parents kind of coming together.
Hmm. We'll come back to that, obviously, because that's what is fleshed out in the book that we're going to be talking about in just a moment. But you, you're at Seattle Pacific University.
I am.
How did you end up at Seattle Pacific University?
Well, it's an interesting...
There's not a lot of former Marxists in the family history at that school.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
No, it is an evangelical university that through a whole variety of different influences has turned out to be an extremely ecumenical campus. That is, it is a place where which cares about Christian identity, but which is very vibrantly diverse in terms of its sort of theological background. And so as a Roman Catholic, I'm welcome there, in fact, encouraged to be there, and find a great deal of interest in what my wife and I have to offer. My wife also teaches at the campus.
Yeah, it's okay. So now, and by the way, the title of the book, folks, is Intruding Upon the Timeless. I gave the subtitle earlier, Meditations on Art, Faith, and Mystery. And if you want to order a copy, the best thing to do is to go online to imagejournal.org. It's published by Square Halo Books, by the way, but imagejournal.org, and you can order the book direct from Image Journal. You can also order it through Amazon and so forth if you want to do it that way. And by the way, there are engravings by Barry Moser, who has been on this show before, and it's just an incredibly nicely done book, which is essentially contributions that you've written from Image Journal. Now, let's talk about the founding of Image Journal. Kind of why, when, and how did this happen?
Well, to hook up with that family story very quickly, I was groomed, you know, in a very well-intentioned way, my father, to become a young conservative intellectual, and I went to Hillsdale College in Michigan, which is a sort of mecca for ambitious young conservatives, and I very much began to feel that I was going to be a warrior in the service of defending Western civilization from all the various modernist and postmodernist attacks on it. So I was rather more political in those days than I am now, but I really cared very deeply about those things. And yet at the same time, aside from the politics, I was interested in literature and the arts, and I was beginning to find that that dimension, which always kept calling me towards a sense of awareness of the ambiguity of human motives and the kind of unintended consequences of political action, pulling me away from politics. And so I had another conflict, another inner agony to try to solve somehow. And I thought to myself, well, again, my combination of things can be saying, who are the great writers of the present day who embody this tradition? It's been said that you know, in the modern era, that faith and art can no longer coalesce. Both the secular critics seem to believe that, as if art was beyond such infantile things as faith, thanks to Freud and others. And the church, the religious people, seem to think that too, because they treated art as if it was monolithically part of the modern world and therefore poisoned at the root. And I wanted to say, well, I'm going to explore this nexus and see if anyone's doing anything. And if there is, I'm going to try to share that with other people. Hmm. And so I did, and the journal became the place where we searched out the new Bachs and Rembrandts and Dantes and T.S. Eliots and Gerard Manley Hopkinses of the present day.
Join us for our next podcast with Gregory Wolfe. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse.